This is a Building Bridges, your Community and Labor Report special. I'm Ken Nash. Jose La Luz is waiting for a debate on the future of the labor movement. So far, all we're getting from the challengers and incumbents within the AFL-CIO is a debate on the structure and financing of the AFL-CIO, which is certainly limited in scope, audience, and participation. It certainly doesn't reach out or involve the masses of workers who are members of unions in the AFL-CIO, or the millions more who are unorganized. If we are to build a movement, we must address issues of race, class, and gender. If we are to build a movement, we must talk about the issues. If we are to build a movement, we must find new ways of getting labor's message out to the working class and the general public, new means of communication. The current tempest in what we call the labor movement does none of that. It is not that workers are complacent. They are angry and worried about their future, and there are forces of the right who are giving them false answers, while the AFL-CIO combatants debate among themselves with no issues or strategies to reach out to the working class. Jose La Luz was formerly Northeast Regional Director of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees for the Eastern District. He was a prime mover in the successful organizing drive of over 100,000 public sector workers in Puerto Rico a few years ago. He is currently a visiting labor leader at Cornell University. He spoke recently at the annual convention of the New York Metro Labor Communications Council. And now, Jose La Luz.
Invitation.
This is really a very serious dilemma for me, because this is very much a debate about the debate that never was. And I was one of those people who was indeed very excited about the possibilities of having this kind of debate. I got excited about it because I was one of the people that discovered immediately after the presidential election that you can undo in a few months what you haven't built for in a few years. And that is, in fact, the challenge of all the affiliates of this thing called the AFL-CIO, the only trade union center that we have in this country. Because, in fact, what I witnessed, was the result of, indeed, another movement that had been building for decades, and the fruits of their labor and how they dealt with the question of power. And these folks were very focused and very serious. Of course, you know who I am referring to. This constellation of organizations and groups and individuals who have been shaping the parameters of the debate in this country and who have managed to shift the discourse or the debate or the conversation in this country, if you will, from one of a liberal tradition support for a welfare state to a situation today where everything associated with the work of the liberals in the 1930s and 40s and 50s has been dismantled. And these extreme elements have managed to capture the souls and the minds and indeed the hearts of an ever-growing number of working men and women, which is perhaps, to me, the most disturbing thing. That in this last presidential election, thousands upon thousands of working men and women, people who do not belong to unions, and certainly many who do belong to unions, that are part of this thing you and I call the labor movement, ended up voting against their self-interest, an agenda which remains very uncertain in terms of their interests as workers. So this today is something that has left a lot to be desired. Now, I was very much in favor for having a debate that would engage thousands and thousands and thousands of men and women. But that never happened. A debate that would have been worker-centered. A debate that would have been worker-driven. A debate that would have taken place throughout the union halls, in the communities and the neighborhoods where the working men and women reside, and that debate has not happened. And somebody is responsible for that. And I dare suggest that it has everything to do with the formation of the men, and it's mostly men, who are leading these institutions you and I call unions. Because if they had a different kind of formation, a formation similar to the ones that the leaders of COSATU in South Africa would have, or the leaders of the CUT in Brazil have, this would have been a real debate from the bottom up. But that has not happened in this country. And there is a price, and there is a very serious price to pay. Because how is this debate, this so-called debate, which is not a debate, being spun by the spin masters of the major media outlets? Well, you only have to read the New York Times a couple of days ago. And it's now been characterized as a fight, you know, for the shifting of the personalities, you know, that happen to be making the decisions in this institution. Is it going to be John Sweeney? Is it going to be John Wilhelm? Is it going to be somebody else that emerges as a so-called compromise candidate, which is supposed to be right now what some people are trying to put together in order to avert the so-called catastrophe? Now, let me say that I am very much persuaded that the questions that were put forward by the group of unions led by the Service International Union are very serious questions indeed that have to be struggled with. The question of density, the question of industrial concentration, those are fundamental questions for a trade union movement that deals with the question of power. But when you frame the debate in terms of power versus democracy, you are committing the same sin that people who forgot to read about this thing called dialectical and historical materialism usually commit, right? These are not mutually exclusive categories. You cannot deal with the question of power if you don't talk about democratic control and democratic participation. And democratic control and democratic participation have everything to do with awareness and the awareness of the class as a class. And the main problem that we continue to face in this country is that the class doesn't have an awareness as a class. And this has everything to do with this Comparsian legacy and tradition, which is at the core of what I thought the debate would be all about. That we would break with Comparsism once and forever, but that is not happening. So what are, you know, in fact, the relevant questions for people like us? I am a worker educator, I am an organizer, I am a popular educator, and I am to some extent a communicator. What is the intersection of communication and education? For instance, you cannot educate if you do not communicate. But what has failed here is precisely education and communication. Because there is not much education of the kind that many of us, you know, were excited about. This has not engaged the minds and the souls of working families in this country. This is a debate right now that is reduced to, you know, some rooms and some circles, and perhaps some unions have done a better job than others. I have to admit that. Perhaps, you know, some of the member unions of the grouping known as Unite to Win have done a better job of communicating, you know, what the proposals are all about. But then you wonder about some of the other characters in the debate and to what extent do they have a commitment to lifting their members and actually putting forth the real issues in this debate. So I am very much disillusioned. In fact, I'm one of those people that is really seriously wondering what is it that I'm going to do after this convention happens in Chicago. If I want to continue spending time, and I have spent 32 years in this institution, or if I want to devote time to something that I am very, very passionate about, and it's the question of the role of immigrants in the transformation of these institutions in this society. And what is happening today with this xenophobic, anti-immigrant climate that we're witnessing, I mean, I could tell you stories about my recent visit to Arizona, witnessing some of the so-called Minutemen, some of them goddamn union members from some of the building trades. I mean, talk about the failure of an institution, right? So I'm struggling with this thing. What is it that I want to do in the years that I have remaining in this planet? And I am reminded of the passing of a great leader in the person of Miguel Contreras, who had done such a tremendous job of transforming that trade union movement in Los Angeles, you know, along with many other men and women, because no one person by himself or herself, you know, can do this. But why is that not happening in New York City? You know, why is not there a revival of the trade union movement so that it can become a vibrant movement here in the city that's supposed to be a goddamn union city? You know, it has to do with leadership and the question of leadership. And the men who are leading these institutions has to be put on the table, because you do not move anything if you do not have the formation that allows you to have the vision, the courage, and then the program to engage people and not be afraid to engage. Because, you know, the problem with many leaders is that they are afraid to engage at the very basic level. I am one of the disillusioned ones, because to me, this is the debate that never was.
This goes back to how these so-called debates are framed. It's always, is it politics versus growth? And I just don't see how things can be conceived that way, what came out of the Vegas meeting, because you cannot do one without the other. And it's certainly not a question solely and exclusively of resources, because you have to deal with the environment, and the environment has to be transformed. And these are political choices that have to be made, and they have to be waged in the field of politics, right? But to me, I think that this has to do with media interest in labor. Now, granted, there may not be a lot of interest in media about labor as an institution, but everything we witness today has to do with class, has to do with what is happening to working men and women and their lives, whether it's called offshoring of jobs, whether it's this tension between the so-called full Americans and the ones who just arrived recently, whether it's the question of the tension between what is happening with China and what is happening, the impact that has on the class here. These are fundamental questions that have to do with working men and women and their lives. Now, is it possible to engage the so-called media decision makers, for a lack of another word, and I don't know the language, to think creatively about this question of what does this institution called the union have to do with the problems of working families in America today? I think that one of the reasons is that, institutionally speaking, unions have failed to become spokespeople or the voices of the larger class. Yeah, which is something you witness in Europe, you know, to this day. I mean, to this day, right? In France, you have a strike. It becomes a strike of the class, right? Never mind South Africa and Brazil. So these are questions that have to do with what I call formation. And does everybody understand the meaning of formation in the context? Is the men who lead these institutions, their formation is somewhat limited, I dare say. Limited certainly by their experiences and everything else, but limited by the lack of exposure, you know, to certain fundamental questions of what it means to talk about the mission of this institution called the union. And the mission of this institution cannot be solely and exclusively to improve the lives of the men and women who happen to be members of it. It has to go way beyond that. That is why there is a Lula, who's the head of state in Brazil, regardless of the critique that the coup has of him and his government. That is what explains that. And that is the failure that we have with this institution you and I call the union. Now, I think that communicators And all of the so-called constituency groups, you know, LACLA, CBTU, CLU, APALA, they're being defunded as well. You know, everything is being defunded. And I hate to use this language, but some people in the audience know what I'm talking about. Remember this thing called the national question, right? How do you deal with the question of race, gender, and ethnicity in mobilizing and transforming the trade union movement if, in fact, you are defunding the so-called constituency groups? Now, granted, the constituency groups have tremendous problems that have to do with leadership and their subservient role to the Federation. But, you know, you have to have outlets and mechanisms to engage people of color and women so that they could be embraced, you know, in this thing. So, to me, this goes well beyond the question of finances, because it certainly cannot be framed the way it was framed at that meeting. I mean, some of us had such problems with the way the whole thing was framed that I must confess here that we attempted to bring this to the attention of the people who work for the presidency, because, you know, in the palaces, there's always people who have to reach the people who make decisions, right? And this palace called the AFL-CIO, there are some men and some women, not many women, who are the ones that think for the people, right? They are the ones that get paid to write and think about so that Sweeney can, you know, produce a statement that is well-scripted and it could make sense. Well, some of us try to get, you know, hold of those people, and we said, you cannot frame this as politics versus organizing, because it's both, and it's a lot more than that, as a matter of fact. This question about education and history and the meaning of organizing and what happens to younger men and women, one of the first dilemmas that those of us who were responsible for the education function in unions, when the debate about investing more resources into growth, organizing, was put on the table, is the elimination of the education function in the unions, believe it or not. For me, this was incredible, because I cannot conceive of organizing without educating, right? In order to organize, you have to educate. In order to mobilize, you have to raise awareness and you have to get people in motion. But many education departments in many international unions were eliminated precisely because the men who called the shots decided that the resources had to be put into organizing and growth. Now, is the education function something that included the teaching of history? For the most part, not. In fact, decisions that were made to eliminate the education function resulted in the creation of vocational education programs, perhaps driven by the organizing departments, where people are taught skills, vocational skills, how to conduct a house call, how to have a one-on-one meeting, but nothing about the formation of ideas, of ideology, right? What is the mission of this thing you and I call the union? That is not the case in COSATU, as you know. That is not the case in the CUT. That is not the case in many other parts of the world where people engage, you know, in dialogue, in conversations about the meaning of the union. It reminds me of a debate that used to take place in the 1940s. Listen to this. Sol Alinsky and Miles Horton. Sol Alinsky is responsible for the creation of this thing you and I know as the IAF. Right, the Industrial Areas Foundation. Would you believe that many of the men and some women that are now responsible for the organizing function in unions were formed in the so-called IAF approach to organizing? And anybody that knows about Sol Alinsky and his approach to organizing knows that it was not about the person being the center, but the person being the subject of the quest for power. Right? So there was a debate, an interesting debate in the 40s with Miles Horton, the founder of the Highlander School, which was about putting the person at the center, in this case, the worker at the center. Even if the institution would suffer in achieving its goals, what was critical and important was that the workers and their consciousness and their awareness will be raised so that they will be engaged. Now, part of the problem that we face today is that many people who lead unions do not think that way because of their formation, once again. So the use of history, and then I would dare suggest that history ought not to be seen as something that is past. History has to be seen as something that is happening. Because if it's conceived solely as something that happened in the 30s, we dismiss everything that we are building today, which is making history, right? And we are, in fact, making history. Listen, the fact that I'm disillusioned about the debate doesn't mean that I am not hopeful about the future of the class. I think that it will be painful. This thing is going to play itself out in July and after July. But I am confident that those of us who are committed to transformation will continue to do so because, you know, it could get a lot worse in this country. The signs are there to get a lot worse. You know, this book that, what was the title? It Can't Happen Here, remember, by Sinclair Lewis. Well, you know something, it may not happen the way it happened in Italy or the way it happened in Germany, but it's an American variety of the same phenomenon, if you know what I mean. The signs are out there, so to blow up the only institution that can stand in the way of this massive movement of the right, which conceives itself as far more than one institution. For me, this has to be more about people paying dues and negotiating a contract. I had hopes for this thing called Working America, I think it was what the AFLs, remember, created in the election, becoming a meaningful tool and vehicle to engage hundreds of thousands of men and women in the movement. But no, it was a farce. It was only for politics, you know? And we need a movement, a social movement. So it has to go way beyond the institutions that we know exist. It cannot be SEIU, it cannot be CWA, it cannot be ASME. There's gotta be something that reaches beyond this bargaining unit concept. Because even in the best case scenario that the Unite to Win coalition succeeds, I dare say they will not organize at the pace that it requires to face this enormous offensive and challenge from the right wing. And I hope Stern succeeds, and I hope Raynor succeeds. I wish him the very best. And perhaps something good will come out of this convention, but it will not be enough. It will not be enough. The immigrants are not being organized by many of the unions simply because they don't happen to be in a bargaining unit, in something that could be conceived as a bargaining unit. You know, that's what Contreras was trying to do in LA, and he's dead. He was trying to tell people, look, I mean, we have to go beyond this concept of the bargaining unit, of the institutional constraints of this thing called the union. This calls for creative approaches, and be creative. You know, if we got a look at the history, let's do it, but it's got to be creative, and it's got to be bold, by God, and it's got to be passionate. It cannot be boring. You cannot have a fellow who stands in front of an audience and puts people to sleep, by thank God. Can't happen that way. It's got to be people who engage. Because when I heard the Federation, which is probably a reflection of most of the unions, don't even have a communication strategy, a national communication strategy, that speaks volumes, right? Which includes not only print, you know, media, but yeah, the idea of a, well, actually, if it's an institutionally owned and controlled cable channel, it would be very boring. If it's the labor movement controlling, whether it's the AFL-CIO or any of the affiliates, it's got to be broader. And that's where the problem comes, because the tensions of, you know, with the intelligentsia that you need to bring and the literati to participate in such an endeavor, and then a labor leader who is insecure, which is the majority of the cases, and you have a problem. But if it happens in other countries, why not here? You know, are we right? It could be done. So the language papers, you know, the regional media, that's very, very powerful. I just wanted to say that what I sense is a lot of anger. The workers in this country are very angry and very upset and very insecure, which is very dangerous. Because if the only ones that are talking to them and relating to them are those other folks that somebody mentioned, the scary ones, we've got a serious problem. And I'm afraid that once you leave this planet called DC, or even planet New York City, and you go out there, people are not being connected with. You know, many of our unions are not connecting with them, but they are connecting with somebody when they go to that church and hear that preacher, or when they go to the community organization. So it calls for a national communication strategy. But the problem is that most unions do not even have a basic strategy to build. You know, a building strategy other than this notion of recruitment and growth, which is called organizing. So we have a challenge ahead, but I think that the communication function today more than ever, like the education function, is absolutely of the essence. Absolutely of the essence. You can argue that maybe the International Labor Communications Association may not be the vehicle, just like the LACLA and CLU may not be the vehicle, but you have got to have a communication function, and therefore you have got to have a communication strategy. That's really what this is about.
You've been listening to labor organizer Jose LaLuz on the non-debate in the labor movement. And this has been a Building Bridges, your community and labor report special produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And for more labor news and views, go to www.buildingbridgesradio.org. That's www.buildingbridgesradio.org for archived Building Bridges national labor shows.